We continue our conversation about Rupert Murdoch and his media empire. Our guest is NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. He's the author of Murdoch's World.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Rupert Murdoch has made the media landscape better or worse? What do you think of Fox News and some of his other holdings? 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. David, you start your book with a remarkable moment. Rupert Murdoch meeting the family of a young girl who was missing, later found murdered, and whose cell phone had been hacked into by one of Rupert Murdoch's media outlets. Give us the story behind that scandal.
Well, you know, there had been rumblings in the years leading up to 2011 of various moments and episodes in which people acting on behalf of Rupert Murdoch's tabloid, The News of the World, their journalists and a private investigator or two, had been hacking into the phone of people who were in the news. But the people who were in the news were either involved in professional sports or were celebrities like Sienna Miller, the actress who used to be married to Jude Law, or politicians like the Deputy Prime Minister, John Prescott. And you know, nobody really took it seriously. There was a sense in British reporting, particularly in the Murdoch press, that these guys were all fair game. And in July 2011, the Guardian revealed that actually this girl, Millie Dowler, 13 years old, who disappeared in 2002 and whose remains were found after her murder 6 months later, and whose disappearance was a national sensation, that her phone had been voraciously hacked into by people acting on behalf of the newspaper. And suddenly people, you know, just ordinary people around Britain who had thought of this as a lark or just as, you know, bad behavior by the rogues at tabloids whom they clucked over but still plunked down a buck to read the reporting of, suddenly they thought this was vile. This was just astonishingly, you know, essentially evil. You know, it was believed at the time, it's now no longer clear, but it was believed at the time that the reporters had also erased voicemail messages on the cell phone of the girl in order to free it up so that additional voicemails could be left so that they could learn more from the girl's friends and other people looking for her and use that for their coverage too. And while it's now not clear that that was actually the case, the family believed that at the time, and they believed that they had been given false hope by the fact that they thought their daughter had been listening to these voicemail messages. So Murdoch, you know, who always feels anti-elites and that he understands the common person, has actually almost never had to confront real-world people, people who are not prominent, people who are not powerful, people who don't know how to deal with the press, but just ordinary, everyday people who have been sucked into the maw of his newspaper's reporting and have felt the pain and the suffering as a result. And in this moment in which the book starts, he's in this extremely posh hotel in a suite on one of the upper level floors where it's just him, the parents of this dead girl, her sister, who have spent nearly a decade trying to come to grips with this. Her killer had been finally convicted only a few months earlier. And he's forced to say to them how sorry he is. Their lawyer says to him, you know, your mother was this great benefactor of Australia and considered a patron saint of Australia. You know, she'd be ashamed of you. And Murdoch looks up at the lawyer and says, my father would be ashamed. And his dad was a very prominent and respected political journalist and later a newspaper executive in Australia. And it's a moment at which, you know, you're thinking about children and parents. You're thinking about a billionaire and the most ordinary, everyday people, Bob Dowler, Millie's father, just an IT guy, you know, an anonymous guy who happened to be caught up in a terrible family tragedy and whose daughter's privacy was violated even as her life had been taken, her privacy violated in this instance by people working on Murdoch's behalf. And so it was a real unusual moment of humbling for a billionaire who usually dictated the terms of how he was discussed.
And yet you write that that lawyer representing that family, the one who said your mom would be ashamed of you, also let Murdoch know that he knew that people had been trying to dig up dirt on him to get him to back off on the case.
Yes, in fact, he said in sort of a coded message to Murdoch, you know, I know you know about me, but I know about you as well. Your mother would be ashamed. But the first part of that statement, exactly as you say, was him saying, I know you know about me. And the reason that they knew about him was that they had been following him and they'd been kind of catch up dirt Lawyers working on behalf of News Corp in the UK actually made representation to judges saying he's clearly been having an affair with a romantic relationship with another lawyer for these other people who are suing News Corp for hacking, and therefore he is compromised ethically and can't represent them. Well, two things were wrong with that. Well, three things were wrong with that, let's be clear. The first off, it's not 100% clear to me why there would be an ethical issue legally and the lawyers I've talked to if he was having an involvement. Secondly, there's no proof he was having any sort of relationship with her, so it seemed to be an untrue representation. And the third thing was, what the heck were they doing following him? They should be defending their own activities. But the whole notion, the Murdoch empire, was built on this notion of, you know, if somebody's coming after you, you punch them harder. And that was represented on their pages. It's represented at times in their PR staffs, and we talked about how they worked at Fox, but they were very combative in England as well at times. And you saw it reflected in the legal stance they took towards those who dared to challenge them. You know, the brilliance of Mark Lewis, who was the lawyer who represented the family of Millie Dowler and many other hacking victims as well, is that he decided at an early point that he would not care about anything they published at him. And if you don't care if people publish gossip or untrue things about you in the tabloid press, you're almost impervious to pain. It's just that most human beings going around and they care whether or not people lie about them. And that's a very different stance to take. He took a very clever stance, and he's emerged a much wealthier man as a result, just relocated to Los Angeles.
One of the big questions as all this was going on was this rogue elements within the News Corporation, or was this, if not directly caused by Rupert Murdoch, caused by the culture he created?
Well, look, right now on trial in London are, among others, two of his former top tabloid editors, Andrew Coulson, who was editor-in-chief of the News of the World, and Rebecca Brooks, who was editor-in-chief of News of the World, then editor-in-chief of The Sun, the best-selling newspaper in the UK, and finally the CEO of Rupert Murdoch's British newspaper arm before she was compelled to resign after the Millie Dowler revelations. It should be noted that the Millie Dowler revelations were followed by revelations that not only were there a slew of other celebrities and politicians who were hacked, but that people who were killed in combat in British armed forces in Afghanistan and Iraq, their phones were hacked. People who were blown up in the July 2005 public transit bombings in London, they had their phone hacks. People who were victims of murders and other things. You know, it turned out that Millie Dowler did not appear to be an aberration, but more of the rule, and police developed evidence suggesting that many thousands of people had their phones hacked, you know, some of whom, you know, were not famous and just happened to be caught up in tragic circumstances. So, you know, I think it's important to say Rebecca Brooks has pleaded not guilty to all the charges against her. She's charged with conspiracy to commit hacking. She's also charged with conspiracy to commit corruption, because what they did was pay off police for information, according to prosecutors, that was illegal and needed to be kept private. And she's also been charged with a conspiracy to conceal evidence from prosecutors and from police. You know, Andrew Coulson has also pleaded not guilty to all the charges he's facing, and some other people as well. But a number of people have pleaded guilty to related charges there. And, you know, while I'm not saying a majority of people involved participated, you know, on trial right now are former CEO, former, chief editor of the News of the World, the top-selling Sunday newspaper in the UK, the former head of security for News International, who, is being charged with, among other things, obstruction of justice and concealing evidence. These are very senior people. Rebecca Brooks was essentially a surrogate daughter to Rupert Murdoch, and Murdoch's feeling was, you know, win at all costs. He did say famously in 1989 that any service the public was willing to pay for that was within the, achieved within the law was a public service, which is a very different definition than public broadcasting or the New York Times or the Washington Post or, you know, the Guardian might put for what public service truly is. It would appear that even by just what's been proven so far, not even by the trials going on currently, that you could argue that a sizable number of Murdoch's journalists in London dropped the phrase within the law and simply said, you know, whatever the public was willing to pay for was a public service, and they did love reading about crime and about political scandal and about celebrity gossip.
I want to spend a minute on this side of the pond and the influence of Fox News, another big part of the Murdoch empire. How successful has Fox been at driving the American political agenda?
You know, Fox is different than than Rupert Murdoch in the sense that it is more conservative in its inclinations, the story threads it picks, the hobby horses it rides, than Murdoch himself. And it also doesn't, unlike his tabloids and the papers in London and Australia, it doesn't toggle back and forth between the two big parties. It sometimes throws Democrats a bone, but basically it is a player in the Republican Party. But what a player it is. I mean, Roger Ailes, who helped run the messaging campaign for then-candidate Richard Nixon in 1968, who helped George H.W. Bush in 1988, who helped run Rudy Giuliani's first and unsuccessful race for mayor in 1989, he basically saw the disappearance of what we used to call the smoke-filled rooms where the big decisions were made for the Republican Party, and it of late decided to make Fox essentially function, its studios function as that smoke-filled room. So, people have to try out in the Kleeglites of Fox News rather than simply be vetted by people, who used to be the big bankers and money guys. So in 2012, he wasn't enamored of Romney. Murdoch didn't smell him as a winner, and Murdoch likes to back winners. And so, they promoted other candidates periodically. They pulled people like Herman Cain out of oblivion, essentially, to be, daily personalities on there. And sure, other networks featured him too, but it was really at Fox where candidates had to stop by and prove their mettle with the Republican voters. And so, Ailes has turned Fox at times into the umpire and the arbiter of Republican presidential primary politics and the viability for candidates for other major offices. Right. And that's an incredibly strong influence to play in a country this powerful.
David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
That's David Folkenflik, NPR media correspondent. His new book is Murdoch's World.
Coming up, our guest wants to change the way we think about immigration reform, set it aside as a national issue, and let states compete for immigrants. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.